Hey everyone, you are listening to Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Of course, Real Conversations is sponsored by Boys Town. Boys Town has been saving children, healing families for over 100 years. Please go to boystown.org to find out how you can help or donate to the girls and boys of Boys Town. Now, my guest this week has been blowing up in Nashville. I mean, he's a singer-songwriter who has written multiple number one songs, including his band Melee's hit, Built to Last. His voice, his songs have been heard in film, TV, radio spots around the world. But now he's gone viral in a very unique way. He pays tribute to the Beach Boys in his original song, in his original hit, Everywhere's Hawaii with My Girl, which has accumulated over a million views on Instagram. I'm sure he's on TikTok as well, but I'm too old for TikTok. My guest today is the multi-talented Chris Cron. You know what time it is. It's time to keep it real with Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Good to have you. I mean, I'm just going to get right down to it, man. Like, you know, you've suddenly gone viral with this Beach Boys sound, which I love, man. As a kid, I grew up like idolizing that lifestyle, that Southern California, and that just continues to persist through the decades, which is a legacy to Brian Wilson, of course, and all of the Beach Boys. But how did that come about?
Okay. So I'm a session singer and I have a client from Tel Aviv, Israel, who hired me to sing a ton of like covers for an app that they had developed. And one of the covers just happened to be, Wouldn't It Be Nice? And I had actually like sung it a few years ago, just on my own, 'cause I love the Beach Boys, but, I did this cover and I thought this will be fun to make a little video and I'll just throw it up on my TikTok. Which at the time had 200 followers and a couple hundred views on each video. I thought nothing of it. I just made this how to sound like the Beach Boys kind of explanatory video and threw it up there and went about my day and checked my phone like an hour later and it has 1,000 views. Oh, wow, that's cool. That's my biggest video of all time so far. And I went and checked another hour later and it was like 5,000 views. I'm like, whoa, this is kind of cool. And it just kept growing. And then I called my wife and like, I think I've gone viral. And it's, but it was only like 10,000 views at that time. And within a month, it grew to over 1.3 million views. And so I just started like feeding the beast a little bit and having fun just making content of one of my favorite bands of all time. And so I started writing my own Beach Boys songs. I have a friend in town who's a Beach Boys fanatic as well. So he and I have been writing a bunch of stuff and yeah, it's been a blast.
Right on, man. Let me ask you this because I'm a Beach Boys fan. What is it about the Beach Boys music that keeps it timeless, makes us feel so good whenever we hear one of their songs?
I think it's the musical equivalent of summer. It's just like every time you hear it, you're transported to a place in time. And their music, whether it's like the silliest song like Barbara Ann, which I know they didn't write, but like, or it's like Don't Talk on Pet Sounds. It's like got this ache and this longing for something that I think all of us have. And it's very romantic. It's very melodramatic. But it just hits you in the right spot and it makes you feel like the sun is shining.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Speaking of Pet Sounds, I mean, still one of the most acclaimed albums of all time. And, you know, I think we had discussed a little bit before we had the podcast episode, just so y'all get a little background. I had mentioned that I'd auditioned originally for Dennis Wilson in the Beach Boys and All American Family, which ran ad nausea on VH1 for years and years, which drove me crazy because I was in the very, I got to the finals, you know, the mix and match session. I'm there with John Stamos, who was producing it at the time. And Of course, I was just a little bit too young to play Dennis because they wanted to age him through the decades before he passed away.
And you would have been a great Dennis.
Well, now I would be, right? Now that I'm of age. But you know, John was like, you're great. You're great. How about Jan and Dean? Why don't you play Dean Torrance in the movie? Which turned out to be a pretty awesome scene because I'm there with Phil Spector in the Wall of Sound. Oh, cool. And, you know.
Who played Phil in that?
You know, I don't know the actor. It was only for a blip. Okay. It was just kind of like a blip, which kind of like his life has become kind of like that. What was, you know.
Oh, man.
My gosh, right? So Brian comes up to me and he's like, "Is that Phil Spector?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Can I meet him?" I'm like, "Yeah, why do you want to meet that jerk?"
Oh, geez, right?
And then I introduce him and I go, "Hey, Phil, this is Brian." And he goes, "I've heard your stuff."
Oh, man, I love it. I have to go watch this now.
It was actually pretty good, man. I mean,
I'm sure
there's been a lot of other Beach Boys movies that have come out that are actually better. I mean, but I mean, it was of the time, and it was so sort of kind of revolutionary. It was a VH1 original, the Beach Boys. It was a 3-part miniseries. Let me ask you, how did you start in music to begin with?
Kind of just grew up in it. I was the first time I remember singing on stage. I was 5. And it was at church. I grew up in like Orange County, California. So in the shadow of the Matterhorn at Disneyland.
How was basically. That?
I mean, it was the happiest place on earth. It really felt like that. My parents sang in the choir at this gigantic church called Melody Land, which is now part of the Disneyland parking lot. It's the building's not there anymore. It's where it was is there. Yeah. And I ran on stage to grab my dad. Like I got loose somehow and ran up there. And then
funny how kids can do that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a solo and I grabbed the mic and started singing. But my whole family sang growing up. My grandpa, my mom's side was in barbershop quartets. And they started me on piano lessons around 5 or 6 too. And I just kind of liked it and was always, you know, in it. And then my dad brought home a guitar from a coworker, a Fender Strat, which I still have, and a little crate guitar amp. And I was 13 years old at the time. And at that point, I thought I was going to be a marine biologist or something. That's, you know, like, and swim with dolphins because I had been to SeaWorld a few times. and I remember, like, just falling in love with this instrument and sitting in my room all summer, just writing songs and learning how to play. Like I was really into ska music at that point.
Sure. That was a big, was a big thing. I mean, I grew up in Oregon, but I did spend my last couple years of high school in North County, San Diego. And of course, ska was like the huge big thing, you know, when I was in high school. So we were like, you know, going to all the different shows, you know, like the Aquabats.
Uh-huh. Oh, dude, I saw the Aquabats at Virgin Megastore at the Block in Orange.
Yeah.
I loved them. Yeah. All that stuff. Yeah. Safe Ferris and, of course, No Doubt and all that.
Yeah.
I just like learned how to play ska songs and write my own. And Weezer had come out. So I was just like, guitars were the thing at that point, and that kind of like spawned my love for songwriting and making music, and then started a band in high school, and the rest is history.
Well, that's, you know, hey, that's a beautiful story, man. It's, you know, and it's funny, it's like it a lot of those stories are very similar. You parallel a lot of artists that are out there that I've spoken to. Let me ask you something. Do you think that writing music can contribute to overall mental health?
Yes, it can also contribute to a decrease in mental health in my experience. But that's when you pair it with the pressures of having to create something commercial and marketable, which I remember writing. So my band in high school, we just to kind of move the story along a little bit, we played a lot in our hometown and got some notice from some record labels and signed with a punk rock label out of Van Nuys called Hopeless Records, which they're amazing people and a great label. And we did the Warped Tour in 2004 and all that. And then got signed to Warner Brothers from there. And I remember the Hopeless record, there wasn't as much pressure. It was just more fun and a little more DIY. But then when we signed to Warner, I had this like thing switch in my head. Like, I have to make this happen and I have to write like the hits. And I remember a good like 6 month period of just kind of freaking out. Like I felt what Brian Wilson must have felt as far as just like having to like create something that is going to stand the test of time, which I haven't in comparison to him, but
I don't think that you're that far off. I mean,
oh, you've no, been thank it. You.
I mean, obviously, you know, that barbershop family gene has been passed on down because you're doing a lot of those harmonies. I mean, right? All those harmonies and doo-wops.
Yeah, yeah. I love that stuff. I was in choir in high school as well. But, I think to answer your question, when I'm doing it for the right reasons and when I'm doing it for the love of it, and it's a release. It's this cathartic thing. It, like, makes me... It makes me feel alive. And I, if I don't do it for an extended period of time, which there has been, I start to get in my head and writing songs is this like beautiful thing that I'm thankfully able to do and will always appreciate and always do it.
Yeah. How important is it to stay true to yourself and follow your dreams?
Oh, well, I think it's very important to stay true to yourself. I think it's important to follow your dreams to a point, because I think I was kind of told by my circle growing up that, you know, it was great. I had a lot of support and I was told to follow my dreams. But at some point, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. At some point, your dreams can lead you astray and they can become a bit of an idol, for lack of a better word, or just like you can put your dreams on a pedestal and then kind of lose sight of the people around you and the loved ones around you. Yeah. So all that to say, yes, follow your dreams, be true to yourself. There's no point in trying to be something that you're not. There's no point in trying to be something for other people, because then you're just, you know, running a rat race, doing something for somebody else, and you're not actually like doing what you're meant to do. All I'm saying is, like, I had to be careful of not letting my dreams kind of push out other people in my life.
And the other important things that come with life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Family and
your family, man, yeah. The children.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you, how do you feel about, I mean, you know, you're going viral suddenly and I don't see there's any end in sight that's going to be happening, but how do you feel about social media influence on kids today?
Oh, I will not let my kids have a phone or any of that until, and they're young, they're 8 and 4, but I'm joking, not until they're
at least 30, 9,
if I can help it. Yeah,
at least nine years old, and then we'll give them their first phone. It's going to be like an Apple 11, but yeah. You know, just to get them started.
No. Yeah, I mean, I have friends who, like, their kids have YouTube channels, and I'm not like trying to judge that, but I just feel like I want my kids to be kids. I'm building a playhouse in the backyard for them. I want them outside. I want them to, like, experience the things I got to experience as a kid, which it's a little different being from Southern California in Tennessee now, but I want them to get dirty and, like, not, I don't want them to lose their innocence too quickly. My son's already come home from school hearing words that I don't want him speaking, we try to just not make it a huge deal, but it just kind of hit me the other day, like, oh, that's kind of a loss of innocence a little bit. Like, now he knows what Yeah.
it's true, man. And I'm a, you know, as a father of three, I wish I would have laid back a little bit more on the iPads and things like that. Not to say that we're not an active family and do sports and things like that, but they really, I don't care how much parental control is there. There's still things that they're getting access to that, you know, may not, you know, focus on what your parental ideas are of what your children should be watching, listening to. But at the same time, I remember as a kid too, I was like, well, I remember seeing that. I remember listening to that, but I didn't really know what it meant.
Totally. Yeah. I think you're right. Like at some degree, like it goes over their head.
Thank God.
Like my son heard the F word and he came home and he got it jumbled up in his head. So he said, Dad, what's cuff? I'm like, oh, I'm not going to repeat what that is.
Those are things that you don't want to get arrested and put on you.
No. Yeah.
And if you keep saying words like that, son, you will.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to wash his mouth out with soap, but.
Now, everybody who's listening out there, you know, make sure you check out Chris's Instagram. I'm sure. Are you on TikTok as well?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I think it's Chris Cron Musics with an S at the end on TikTok because music was stolen for some reason.
Oh, funny.
Chris Cron Music on Instagram. Yeah.
But, you know, but so you can see some of these incredible Beach Boys originals and also, you know, some of the stuff that he's covered. But, you know, the Beach Boys music is such an upper. But sometimes, like country music, for example, can focus on more of a negative, you know, some negative things. Lost love, broken hearts.
Yeah.
Are you generally a more positive person in your life and with your music choices?
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally more positive. But I definitely, like, I love dark, broody music as well.
Yeah.
I went through my Radiohead phase and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and that kind of stuff.
Tool. Like,
there's a band out of Boston called Cave-In. They're this like super heavy, like post hardcore band that I love. But like generally, yeah, I love melody and I love love songs. Like I've kind of come full circle where that was what I loved when I was a kid. And then I, you know, went through high school and college and got into Britpop and then, yeah, all the like, you know, more darker bands and thought that I had to be dark and deep and broody and with what I created. But I never really created anything that dark, even though I thought I was. But I've just kind of come back to like, all I want to do now is put love songs out there because the world is a dark enough place. Like I'm trying to adopt like a mantra of like, what would Mr. Rogers do?
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually met Fred.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I met him. He received his honorary, it was a Lifetime Achievement Award. It was a daytime Emmy because his show was always on during the daytime. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was just the year before he passed away too. I remember being there in the audience and watching him while he gave that acceptance speech. I met him afterwards, but it was not a dry eye in the house. Like, he was such a part of so many integrations of young people's lives. And he was a powerhouse in that way. And that is what a great, you know, ideal to look at as far as, you know, somebody to look up to and create a, you know, what would Fred do?
I think there's maybe this is just in my own head, but it feels like there's a stigma that like positivity and joy and happiness in art is kind of cheesy. And I think it's the opposite. I think sometimes like the cheesy thing is like, to try and be smart and to try and be like poking your finger at the man or like, which I love the Clash. You know, I love like punk rock and stuff like that too. But I don't know. Like, I think there's really something to like caring for people and talking about love and putting that as a example in front of people.
Sure. Sure. You know, yeah. And I find that with most musicians too, even your punk rock artists, they're still big saps. And speaking of which, I saw just today on the cover of the New York Times, I believe, or it wasn't the cover, but it was in the New York Times. And the question mm-hmm. was, why do people love sad songs?
Hmm. Have you heard there's an episode of Revisionist History?
I haven't.
What's his name's podcast? Malcolm Gladwell's podcast.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they talk about like why country music makes you cry, kind of back to your country music thing. I think sad songs like are like super honest. That's one hard thing about writing like poppy, upbeat, happy songs is they don't necessarily feel as honest. Like a sad song, you have to like to make it work. You have to kind of dig out some stuff in your soul. And I think like the world is this like dual place of like extreme beauty and extreme like ugliness. And so there's this like tension in people. So like we long for the beauty, but we sometimes sit in the ugly, if that makes sense.
It does.
So I think sad songs like, they like point to the, at least the best ones, in my opinion, they kind of point to the beauty while they're sitting in the ugly. And I think that, yeah, is why they resonate.
Elton John sang it, right? Sad songs say so much. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, I am a sucker for sad songs. I mean, I am. And I find not the sadder the better, but just something that's more thoughtful. And mm-hmm. something that people can relate to in that way. But then, of course, you know, I like, you know, that to get up and dance. And so I think that it all has its place. And that's what the wonderful thing about music is that we can literally turn the tune on and change our mood in a second.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Do you know the song The Luckiest by Ben Folds?
Oh, I love Ben Folds.
Yeah, this song The Luckiest, it's like, it's this really like syrupy love song, but the second verse talks about, I think it's the second verse, he talks about like, what if he said there's an old man who lived till his 90s and he passed away, and the next day his wife stayed around for a couple of days and then she passed away, and then he's like, I'm sorry, that's a weird way to tell you that I love you, basically. But like he's pointing at this like really sad thing as an example of like, oh, it's sad, but it's also like super beautiful that they like loved each other so much. It's like The Notebook, you know?
Oh, dude, The Notebook. What a tearjerker.
I did not think I was going to mention The Notebook on this podcast.
Well, dude, you just did.
I just did.
I'm going to tell you, I originally auditioned for that role, you know, that Ryan Gosling.
Really?
Yeah, no, years ago, many years ago. And I read the original script, and I remember crying multiple times reading it. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
I got to take
a 15. How can you not?
I got a 15-minute break in me. I got to walk away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so sad, but so, like such a good example of what love is, too.
For sure. And I think that's what we as humans draw to as for music, you know, and influences. If you could lay out a roadmap to the rest of your life, what would make you, I guess, the most happy?
Oh gosh. Have a hit song that makes me a lot of money and I don't have to work the rest of my life. No. I mean, honestly, like if I could figure out a way to my wife and I have this thing. We talk about how we as soon as our kids are like out of the house, we just want to like pack up and go and travel and see the world together. I think if I could figure out a way to make that happen where we could go live in Italy for a year or live in Japan for a year. That would be awesome. But I think like, I just want to be able to get to a place where I can create and stay 16 in the garage for the rest of my life. Like where I can make music that makes me happy. And I find an audience. It doesn't have to be large, but just an audience that is, will support me in doing that. And then I'd love to be able to like somehow work with my wife in what she's doing. She's a gardener. And I think at some point I'd like to kind of put music down as a full-time career and just pick up a shovel and get out there. And because I really enjoy, we have a huge garden in our backyard and I enjoy like building boxes and putting up, you know, trellises and all that kind of stuff for her. So I think that would be a joy one day.
Yeah. No, let's talk about that garden for a second.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like it's like full on, like you say your wife's a gardener. Now, yes. I know we spoke a little bit about this, but she's also doing something as a outreach. But let's, first of all, like, what's your garden like?
I mean, I wish I could turn the computer so you could see it. But it's this, like, 30-foot by 30-foot square in our backyard that I've built a bunch of boxes. I'm kind of looking at it right now. We've got chickens. We just put bees in the backyard. Yeah. My wife's also a beekeeper. But she got into it when she was living at my in-laws, you know, her parents' house before we got married. And this is actually a cool story. She had planted a tomato plant and was so excited about it and checked on it every day and checked on it every day. And she knew like that there weren't any tomatoes yet. But one Sunday I bought a ring and I tied it with a little red ribbon to the tomato plant. And I said, and I went over there and was like, hey, there's a tomato on the plant. She's like, no, I checked it like an hour ago. There's no tomatoes. I'm like, no, you got to come check this out. It's out here. And so you know, she went out and I knelt down and proposed and that's wow. how we got married. So we got married in a garden and you know, we didn't get married. We got engaged in a garden. And, she's just kind of always loved it. And then when we moved to Tennessee, she heard about this master gardening program. So she took that and now she's a certified Tennessee master gardener.
Wow. And I didn't realize there was like certifications that could come along with that.
Yeah, I didn't either, but she's like official now.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah.
And now she can marry you in a garden as well, officially.
She told us, yeah, she can officiate a wedding under a rose bush. So she took a job at a company called the Center for Learning and Living, which is a rehab facility for adults with mental illness. So schizophrenia and dementia and all sorts of things. They live on the property and she runs their horticulture program. So they have a gigantic, like 20 times as large as our garden here, this gigantic garden that she's kind of transformed. They have a greenhouse and they run a CSA, which if you don't know what a CSA is, it stands for Community Supported Agriculture. So members of the community can come buy a share. And every week they get a bushel of produce that the residents are part of growing. She teaches them how to garden. She teaches them how to make things with all the produce out of the garden. They make everything from salves and body butter and all that kind of stuff to just typical, you know, beets and vegetables and that kind of stuff. Dude. And she loves it. She gets to help people and she gets to garden and be outside. It's like, it's really, really cool to see her kind of flourish in that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's amazing. And not to mention what it must do for people that do have mental disorders that are conflicting in their life, that to have that ability to connect with nature and you know, I mean, selfishly, probably what it does for her too. I mean, it's probably a wonderful program.
Yeah, I mean, like being in the sunshine, there's like so many studies that like the sunshine like heals and people that actually like dig in the dirt, they get all the like minerals and vitamins and stuff out of the dirt that are there. It's pretty wild what like the earth actually gives us, you know, just from being outside. And I sit in my studio all day, like away from all of that. So At some point, again, I'd love to be out there in the.
You're like, one day I'll get back out into the sunshine.
One day,
once I crawl out of my vampire studio.
Yeah, right.
No, it's funny because I had all my blood work done recently. Just, you know, I went in for a deep dive into my blood work. Just wanted to find out everything that might be going on, or good or bad. Yeah. And you know, everything came back, you know, pretty decent. But the one thing that came back, they're like, "Well, you need a little bit more vitamin D." And I was, they're like, but that's easy. You just got to get outside a little bit more. I'm like, oh, tell me about it.
Yeah. It's hard. We did, last year, we did this thing called the 1,000 hours outside challenge, which is just as simple as it sounds. Spend 1,000 hours during the year outside, but it's way harder than you think. Cause that's, if you do it every day, it comes out to like 2.75 hours a day that you have to be outside.
Oh, wow.
So if you miss a day, the next day you've got like over 5 hours that you have to be outside. So I tried and I got up to like 800, and there were days that I slept outside overnight just to try and like bump the numbers up.
Wow. No, I never think about it like that. That's so crazy. If you put it into like an actual number of time that you're actually spending outdoors, where you know, it's I would think that I would be spending more than that, but actually I'm thinking about it. I'm like, no, I don't do that.
I know, it's really, really hard, especially in the wintertime.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm in Charleston, South Carolina these days, so the winters are they're I was in Utah for 5 years, and that was, you know, a little bit more difficult, of course, getting out, but
but at least you can ski there.
Exactly, you know, you can be like, I got an excuse to go out into the cold.
I know, Tennessee, it just gets gray for like 5 months. And,
you know, it's weird too, like in the South when it freezes, like it's like a really bone chilling freeze versus like if you're in a desert cold. I don't know why that is. It just feels colder to me. Like I could be out wet, I guess. Right. It's just more that some of that humidity, and it's like something extra that just makes you just cold.
Every February, we both start looking at houses on Zillow in California. Even though we can't afford it anymore, we're like, oh, what would it be like?
Yeah, it'd be 75 every day.
Every day.
Now, if this is a question I ask everybody on the podcast, if you could take a ride in the Jacob Young time machine.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I own one.
That's like copywritten. That's a thing.
I own one.
Oh man, I gotta come over.
If you could take a ride in the Jacob Young time machine, what advice would you give to teenage Chris?
Oh gosh. I think I would say, I think I would go back and tell myself to stop trying to be so cool. Because I never have been cool, but there was a time that I thought I was, and I was trying to be. And I know that it affected how I operated when my band got signed, and I know it affected how I operated with choices in my career. I think I would just tell myself, just be dorky Chris and be okay with it. Just, yeah, that's the only thing I could think of to say to myself.
No, that's great advice, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody I've talked to, that, you know, it's different, man. And it's just like, you know, it's good to reflect on it, and good to hear. And then, of course, for anybody that's listening, of course, ask yourself that question. It's I find there's many things in my life. I wish I would have told myself that.
What was the like funniest or weirdest answer you've gotten to that question?
I've had people go like, that's a good question. I've had people actually just go, there's nothing I would tell myself. I was completely together and I knew what I wanted from the very beginning.
Oh, okay. The Ubermensch.
And that's happened like 12 times. But it's not often, but there is.
I regret nothing.
I regret nothing. I made myself. I did it all myself, and nobody helped me.
Oh, I did it my way.
Yeah,
oh God.
Totally.
Have you seen, speaking of punk rock and that song, we're just coming full circle here. Have you seen the Sid Vicious version of that song, which was in the movie Sid and Nancy too? They did a,
I haven't seen the Sid and Nancy, but it's, I do know the story. I mean, I've seen the documentaries.
Yeah. Just rips that song apart, and it's the best thing ever.
I've got to check it out.
Yeah, yeah. I'll send you the YouTube link.
Hit me with it, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
So Boys Town, who I work with, of course, one of their mottos is "He ain't heavy, he's my brother," just like the song, right? The expression came from, you know, early 1910-12. And Father Flanagan was just establishing, you know, Boys Town, Nebraska, and they didn't have all the gear, hospital stuff that they could give all the kids. And some kids, you know, they were suffering from different disabilities. And so the boys would take turns carrying another boy around to football, to classes. And then one day Father just asked him, said, hey, you know, isn't he heavy? And he said, he's not heavy, Father. He's my brother.
Oh, that's so good. That'll preach right there.
And with that, who's carried you, Chris?
Oh, man. Who has carried me? I mean, apart from my wife, who is a saint, my parents have carried me. I've got a new friend out here. I started back in, actually a year ago. There's this thing called spiritual direction, which is like, it's not counseling, but it kind of is. It's more like having a guide to help you kind of hear what God might be telling you. And so I had gone through some things and just needed to kind of clear my head. And so I've got this guy, Bob Wood, here in Nashville, and he's really, really helped, like, by just listening and being sitting in awkward moments with me and being quiet and helping me kind of like churn through some of the things I've dealt with. Shout out to Bob Wood, my spiritual director.
Right on, man.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. No, I mean, my missus.
What about
too.
You?
Yeah, my missus, man. She's, you know, she's been there since, you know, well, we met in New York when I was in my mid-20s. She was just 19, I think, at the time. And we've been inseparable. I mean, now we have a family, and she's still my best friend. And it takes an army, though, right? It really does to have, you know, if you think about it, you're going to reflect on it and be like, yeah, dang. Could have said that, but it's not even about that. Just it's about, you know, what's poignant in your life at that time. And it's, you know, it does, you know, your lifetime, you know, we lean on our friendships and our family and the people that we love. And because we can't do this alone. It's a hard, treacherous journey, and it's only a blink, you know, it's only a blink on the planet, but you know, we have an eternity to look after, you know, to after
absolutely
that we're,
yeah, like, I know. I don't understand when people say I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and I did this myself. And it doesn't make sense to me because no one can actually claim that and it be true.
Yep.
Like everyone has people that they've had to, just as kids, just as little kids.
Like, or even in their most dire moments as an adult, somebody has given the olive branch, so to speak, and helped them. Because, you know, it's hard to walk through this world and not find kind people. You just have to have your eyes open and your heart accessible.
Yep, absolutely. And then be a conduit of kindness yourself.
Exactly.
Not like saying karma or whatever, but just that if you're kind, it attracts kindness attracts kindness, I believe.
Sure. 100%.
Yep.
remind everybody again how they can follow you on your social platforms so they can just help that viral sensation going.
Okay, so on Instagram, I'm Chris Cron Music, and on TikTok, it's Chris Cron Musics. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/ChrisCronMusic, although I kind of just post randomly when I remember.
You mean like Facebook's kind of an old thing?
it's like I go on there and it's like that meme where the dog is sitting in the fire and he says, "This is fine." That's sometimes what Facebook feels like.
Yeah.
No offense.
No offense. I mean, I still post on there. I've got my Facebook account too. I mean, it's just like most people are like, "You're not on my Facebook group." And I'm like, I haven't been on a Facebook group in a very, very long time.
Yeah, we have this iHeart Spring Hill Facebook page that I was on for a while, and I just had to shut the door on that because someone could post the most innocuous thing, and 100 people will jump on it for some reason, and it just becomes this whirlwind of noise that I don't want to participate in.
Yeah, no. I mean, the only thing that's ever come out of positive, I mean, with Twitter too, for that sake. Yeah. But I remember wasn't even on Facebook. I wasn't even on Twitter. And ABC was trying to push me to do it. And then I got on CBS and they were like, "No, you have to. You have to do this." And so, like, their PR teams were like, "You know, either that or we're going to create one for you." And I'm like, I'd rather create my own. Fine.
Yeah. Then they're speaking for you and you don't. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I ended up just kind of caving to it and doing it. And then I ended up kind of enjoying it. Twitter at first, because it was only just like live broadcasts and things like that. But it, you know, ultimately I just found that it was like a lot of naysayers on Twitter, which becomes kind of icky. It makes you feel like weird. And so I was like, yeah, I'm not so sure, which then Instagram sort of popped up and then I was like, oh, this is actually kind of good. It's people are keeping it pretty clean. And, I feel, you know, like, you know, it's more uplifting than anything, but
yeah, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you found like that you get trolls on your social media accounts?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yo, you're in for it, dude. You're in for it.
Oh, I know. I've been like, my eyes are wide open right now. Like, whoa. So most people, 90% of people, maybe even 95, are wonderful and positive and encouraging. And then there's people that I'm like, you must do this for fun. Just coming out of the woodworks, like saying the nastiest stuff. And I'm trying to like Ted Lasso it a little bit of just like,
well, just, you know what you do. Yeah. You know what you just do. I mean, you can do that and just have fun with them. Uh-huh. Don't say, don't feed the fire, right? That's the worst thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A girl that I know, she's a friend of mine. She's pretty darn famous. Uh-huh. She said, just don't respond to them. You know, don't do anything. That's what I do. And, if there's any negativity, I just typically block them. So they're gone.
Yeah.
They're just like a blip that goes off the map and they're never going to return again.
Yeah. I've fortunately gotten to a pretty, I feel like, mentally healthy place where I don't let it bother me, but it's still like, whoa, that one.
Sometimes, you know,
five
stings.
Years ago, me, that would hurt.
Yeah. No, it stings. It still stings for me, man. Like, you know, people, I'm like, how could you be so harsh? All I'm trying to do is like, we're spreading love here and we're trying to be good to each other. But prepare yourself, brother, because it's just going to, you're going to have more of that. And you're probably going to take my advice and be like, he just said block him and delete them.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to try that one out.
Well, Chris, I just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to talk today.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a privilege and a blast.
I'm a big fan of your music and what you're doing. And I know just going to continue to uplift people's soul. And if you haven't checked it out, everybody, make sure you go to his socials, and you can also listen to his original music as well. And all those links are there too on your link tree. Do you have a link tree?
Yeah, on my link tree, all the stuff is there.
Yeah, so just check it all out and keep on killing it, man.
Thank you. I will. I'll try. As long as this wave is going, I'm going to ride it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
That's about all the time that we have for this week, but the Boys Town toll-free national hotline, 1-800-448-3000, is a 24/7 crisis resource and referral number, not just for kids, it's for their parents too. And they're always there to help anyone having suicidal thoughts, risking any type of self-harm, parenting problems, physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, stress, anxiety, anger problems, school problems like bullying, peer pressure, and chemical dependency. Now, if you're suffering with any of these issues, or you just need someone to talk to, someone is there for you 24/7. Just call the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. Don't feel like talking? You can text VOICE to 20121. VOICE to 20121. Someone will get back to you immediately. Boys Town, saving children and healing families. Till next time, love each other and love yourself.